This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler.
And we are here finally, here on another episode of the Spoiler Room. We are going tonight to talk about a film that came out of nowhere, and it is Sunday, March 13th, and I have a great collection of Spoiler Room crew members here to help talk about this interesting film called 10 Cloverfield Lane. First off, we have Gonza Riffick back in his house, the one and only lovely Andrew Scheer. Hello, sir.
Hey, what up, Mark? How the hell are you, man?
Are you here to sell me some propane and propane accessories?
Man, no, I'm anti-pain, man. I don't like no pain. Damn.
And next to Andrew is the Bowtie Man, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Paul Salzer. Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and I hope everyone else is doing well as well.
That's well nice to say there, Paul.
Thank you.
Deep subject.
Yes. Subject. And last but not least, we have the Tiger Power in the room. You can feel the energy. It is Mr. Tony Estrada. Hello, Tony.
What's up, you guys? Thank you again, Mark, for having me here. It felt like only 5 years since I've been on your last Spoiler Room, but thank you for having me on.
More like 5 days. But hey,
exactly.
You know, 5 years, days, there we go.
Who's counting?
Who's counting? So, Cloverfield Lane is this film that came out of nowhere, and for those who aren't paying attention, it's a story where after getting into a car accident, a woman is held in a shelter by two men who claim the outside world is affected by a widespread chemical attack, directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who is a newcomer to it, but that's kind of fitting considering this film came out of nowhere. Andrew, how the heck did they hide this film and then just spring it on everyone?
I don't know, man. I mean, like, to my knowledge, nobody was, like, clamoring for a Cloverfield sequel. But, you know, after watching it, I just couldn't help but think, well, it's probably because this wasn't one. I sincerely doubt that this was written as a sequel to Cloverfield, and I would like to know why. You know, they ended up just kind of tacking the title on and, you know, adding some stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if this was a whole other movie that had already, if not been made, was already going to be made. And then they just decided, you know what I'm saying, to fast track it and tack the Cloverfield thing on as an afterthought.
Funny you should say that, because I was, now that the cat's out of the bag about the film's actually on screens. Apparently, this originally was a script called The Cellar.
Ooh.
Yeah, and with a production name of Valencia. This is according to trivia, but I also read this elsewhere. And it was actually reworked into a Cloverfield sequel. Now, a lot of people call it sequel, but J.J. Abrams himself, I saw in an interview, referred to it more as a sister film.
Huh. As
kind of a blood relative.
A blood relative, if you will. Of the actual Cloverfield film. So it's like the same alien stuff is happening, or similar alien stuff is happening, just in a different part of the world. And it was initially titled The Cellar. And, yeah, they did tweak it to go with the Cloverfield. And now I'm not sure why they tailored it.
Wait, were they already making it when they decided to change it? Or
they
was
had
it
the script.
It hadn't actually... See, I was thinking it was already a movie that had already been in production or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, he had the script already, I believe, but it wasn't... They tailored it a bit. They spun it a bit to match the Cloverfield universe.
Okay.
Which actually, I kind of liked. I liked how that played out. Paul, John Goodman...
Excellent in this film. I enjoyed everything about him. He was kind of creepy, and he was still sympathetic, and then he was just, you know, downright horrifying.
He was. I think this is probably one of his best performances in a while. Tony, what'd you think of John Goodman as Howard, the guy owner of this shelter?
Oh man, talk about a character that had so many layers to him. Like, he'll be creepy in some moments, and then he'll be all sympathetic, like Paul said, and then he's just like all nice. So it's all like, okay, is this guy good or is this guy bad? So it's all like there was a mystery to him. That's what I really liked about his character, honestly. Like, there was a mystery that you had no idea who he was. But yeah, John Goodman was excellent in his role. Like, he knew how to be creepy, but he knew also how to be playing out as a nice guy to kind of mislead you.
Yeah, he just had that perfect mix, and he carried it all the way through. Andrew, I think you made a mention of his eyes. What did you think of John Goodman's performance in this and how he portrayed Howard?
He's just wild, man. I mean, you can't, like, you'd never know how to feel about him just when you think you got him pegged. You know how it works, man. People that watch a lot of movies, like all of us, man, we start trying to suspect stuff while we're watching it. And we're thinking, like, we're trying to think ahead of the movie. We're trying to, like, outsmart the movie or trying to say, like, you know, your mind kind of darts around. And that character never lets you hang on to anything for very long. Because just when you think you know something, it flips it around and you don't. And this could have been like, there's like a few different kind of movies happening here, really. And so I'm thinking like, oh man, is this, that's kind of why I think the Cloverfield title, I kind of wish that it wasn't that, but I know probably it would have never gotten made as whatever it was called, if not, because I kept thinking about aliens actually exist if this is a Cloverfield movie. And I wish I hadn't been thinking that the whole time. That's like that was kind of my only quibble about it. But man, it's not just one of his best. Tony put it really well. It's just like, I think this is like award worthy type stuff, and I hate it so early in the year because you know they'll forget come the winter time.
Well, especially for John Goodman, because I always think John Goodman is an underrated actor.
Well, and he gets the same kind of roles a lot, too, you know?
He does, and that's because, I mean, he was in such an iconic role, especially for those of us growing up during the Roseanne Barr TV show. A lot of people had a hard time looking past him being just Roseanne's husband, I think, you know? And he's so much more, and in this film, oh my lord, I loved him in this movie from start to finish, and you're right. You're not quite sure what type of film you're getting into because, especially for those of us who watch horror films, in the beginning you see, you know, she has the car accident. We're not quite sure who hit her at first. And then suddenly she wakes up in this room chained to a bar with a brace on her knee and, you know, fluids in an IV in this really dank room with a dungeon-type door. I mean, you're like going, oh, crap, this is really creepy. And then he comes in, and that sound for the door. Andrew, that sound design for the door, did they make that thing just evil?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is, it's such a, I kept feeling like it was a horror movie. It really mm-hmm. plays like what they call bottle horror, which means it's a term that's sometimes used to refer to a horror story that's contained in one. You know, like Frozen would be a bottle horror, even though it's on a ski lift, or Night of the Living Dead, or Dog Soldiers, or, you know, any of those that are just confined to one space. You know what I mean? It just, yeah. I never was thinking sci-fi until, again, I go back to the Cloverfield title. I'm like, well, okay, then I got to compare it to Signs or something in my mind, you know?
Well, yeah, and actually I like this better than Signs by quite a bit.
Sure.
But not only John Goodman's character, but Tony, Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays the female who gets in the accident, the heroine of sorts, I guess, in this film. How'd you like how they portrayed her? At first I thought they were going to be a little vulnerable with her, but she shows some strength. What'd you think about her?
I thought she was a strong female character, honestly. Like, you know, like, obviously she wasn't really saying anything, and you're kind of like watching a movie going, okay, how are they going to portray her character exactly? You're kind of hoping she wouldn't be one of those dumb female characters that you would see in some horror movies, but thank goodness they actually didn't go that route. She actually did have common sense to her. And talk about just planning things like through, like the stuff that she had to plan through just to get out of the bunker, right? You call it a bunker, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like the things she planned out to get out of that bunker was like, wow, that's talk about being bold, being brave. And I was really rooting for her character throughout, and I felt like even when they fleshed her out about how she wanted to be like a fashion designer, but you know, she just couldn't come through because she had doubts. But as the movie goes along, you could just tell she has, I guess the best way to describe it is that she had more confidence in herself as the movie was going along. And I don't think the character would work as well if it weren't for Mary Elizabeth Winstead, because to me, I do think she is one of the best young actresses working today.
Yeah, I have to agree. And Paul, what about you? Did you like? You know, they added that little misdirection with her character at first, because when she wakes up, she's panicky and she's crying a little bit and trying her phone, but then she kind of gets MacGyver like, doesn't she?
I did enjoy that part of it, but then after that, I started not liking her character at all, which is odd because I do enjoy characters that are like that. I guess it's just because I felt for John Goodman's character at that point. Until they flipped him, of course. So it was to me, her character was, she was too paranoid. It was like, my God, you're just as much a conspiracy type person. And understandably, I mean, she was kidnapped, all the certain circumstances. But then, you know, as she starts getting the story revealed to her as we see it too, you know, you start to think, my God, you really were just overly paranoid. And then she turned out to be somewhat right and then somewhat wrong. I did want to make one comment about what I think Cloverfield really is. Sure. It's the series itself, you know, just based on the two movies that came out. To me, I think Cloverfield is just a term for what they want to do as an homage to the old sci-fi monster films. Like the first Cloverfield is kind of an homage to the Godzilla type kaiju films. And then this is more of like a War of the Worlds type of alien type of movie homage, and that's why I thought, well, that's why they're playing the 50s music, because it kind of takes you back to that. And so, yeah, just like Anthony did, kind of felt that this was more of a horror movie than a sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, I was like thinking myself back into like that time frame of watching these kind of B movies, you know, B movie sci-fis with the zany monsters and, you know, kind of like creatures from outer space type of thing. And that's what I think Cloverfield is meant to be, is just a, like, you know, it can be different. It can be about aliens, but it's sort of that feel. Let's get back to that old style of B-movie type of horror sci-fi. So, anyways.
Yeah, it seems to be almost a brand of, you know, if it says Cloverfield in the title, you know kind of what it's going to pertain to, but you're not quite sure. And I mean, again, with this film, it still just throws back to me how they were able to hide this film for so long. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still, I'm just trying to wrap my head around that, much less how actually decent, and I'm glad it's decent that it was. Andrew, what about you and Mary Elizabeth's character? How'd you feel about her? Did you think she was a little over-paranoid in herself?
No, man. I mean, like, she didn't ask him why he had her chained to the wall, which would have been the first thing that I asked, you know? It's like, if you don't have no sinister intent, you know, if you saved me, you know, when you go to the hospital, yeah, they put an IV in you and stuff, but they don't strap you in and lock you in unless you committed a crime, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was a wild kind of aspect of it. Like, you know, it's like, why is she? That's why I didn't trust him.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, not only just from the trailers, but just that first scene, something seems just a bit off, you know? He's got her chained and he's still closing that door, that heavy, really loud, scary, imposing door.
But did they ever establish whether or not that door was locked, though?
He closes it, but no, they never establish it that if it actually can open it or not.
She tried to open it and she couldn't.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, that. So the chain to the wall thing just made it sketch from the start, you know? So, sure. Yeah, I sided with her because, to me, he was a serial killer.
I will just say...
He was afraid of her.
Yeah, it was a Saw thing to do, you know?
I would just say she handled the situation better, because if I was in her shoes, I would be like, oh my God, oh my God, what's he going to do to me?
Well, that, you know, that's what I was saying with her character is I liked it because at first she cried a little and started to panic a little in her room, but then her mind immediately started going, how the hell can I get out of this situation?
Yeah, no, she's the audience, you know? She's who you're supposed to hook into, you know? I just, you know, cause Saw is bottle horror also, now that I think of it. So it was just like, to me, I had to side with her. She was the person that made sense, you know? She was the you in that scenario. Because who are you going to side with, the crazy dude or the redneck or whatever?
Yeah.
I sided with the crazy dude. I said I thought he was afraid of her.
That's because of you, Paul. That's just how you are.
you just like to sympathize with the real...
He's good with abstract. You know what I mean? Yeah. I would have never thought that. That's how Paul... I wasn't trying
to... I didn't come out right. You sided with the sickle, Paul. That's great.
No, that's okay. He called me Anthony instead of Andrew. So now
Andrew, I know. That's why. I'm sorry.
That was a little retaliation.
Yeah,
a little passive aggressiveness going on.
That's because I got Anthony actually chained to the wall in my cellar right now. So, not Andrew, but Anthony.
That's cool.
That's all right. We're good. Yeah. We can edit that out later. There's one third character in the cellar that is an interesting character, and I like that they put him in there. And the Emmett character, played by John Gallagher Jr., and I loved him because this poor guy, he's just in there because he wanted to live. But he's the one that, I mean, is he just the neutral body there, Paul? Is he the kind of just the, outside of being able to give us information about Howard, but he doesn't have any ill intent or anything. He's just happy that he's not outside.
Exactly. And he even comments that he forced himself into the bunker because, you know, that's how he breaks his arm. And I did like his character a lot because of that. I think he was, I don't know, he was just an interesting character to me.
I wanted to see him more, actually, because he was the guy that just, you know, he's like, I'm just happy to be alive. He understands the situation that he got himself into, so he's not completely clueless hick like you might expect. Again,
he didn't have the creativeness of Michelle, though. She had the brains to be able to figure out problems,
and that's what I liked, is each of these characters don't quite fall into the trope stereotypes that you might expect from a film like this, do they, Tony?
No, I don't think so. I think this movie tried to avoid, like what you said, the character tropes, you know? I think this movie just wanted to handle it in a way where you can get behind each character. Like, you don't have to necessarily, like, root for them. Let's say for example, John Goodman, the movie. But you could tell the movie wanted to avoid the cliches and make you just get behind the characters. And that's why I actually really loved Emmett, because sure, maybe his role isn't as big as Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman, but at the same time, it didn't feel like the movie thrown him in there. I actually liked that we had a third person because it gave Michelle, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, at least someone to talk to, because if he wasn't in the movie, who else would Michelle be able to talk to about Howard and really much how to get out there? Like, I see it as someone for Michelle to talk to, someone to kind of bond with in this very treacherous situation. So, honestly, I really like that they added Emmett to this movie.
Well, he is added, but then he is not added either. Andrew.
I know why you say that.
Andrew, you could kind of see where it might have been going, but did that surprise you when Emmett gets the bullet to the head, exactly when he gets that in the film?
Yeah, and the way they did that moment was really well done, too, because Emmett, let's face it, if you've watched enough Twilight Zones or Star Trek, you know who's the red shirt.
Yeah.
And it was just the odds weren't in his favor because he wasn't one of the leads. So, you know, something bad is going to happen to him, but you're not expecting it when it does. And the thing is that it's not a gotcha or a shock in a normal kind of a way, because what they do is they've got this vat of liquid that can dissolve anything. And so my thought is, oh God, he's going to maim this guy with this stuff. My thought wasn't that he was going to kill him. My thought was that he was going to shove poor Emmett's hand in there or something, you know. And so I was expecting something actually much worse than him just being shot.
Yeah, I was expecting that something more horrible too, either her, you know, him grabbing him and then shoving him in the barrel. What about you, Paul? How'd you like how that scene played out where it just like, oh, thanks for telling me the truth.
it was a good moment for me. I was surprised because I did think that he was going to be just dunked into that thing, and it was just like, or also too, there was also that moment where it felt like, okay, Howard is accepting of what's going on, you know, and then just boom. Okay. Wow.
Just when I was liking you, Howard.
Yeah. But well, for my thing is like, you know, he wanted to protect what he thought was his daughter.
Yeah, but in a creepy way. And it was like Emmett was the guy that was forcing Howard to be at least a little bit more normal towards Michelle. But once he removed that dam, if you will, I mean, he just flips to instant creepy. I mean, oh, I gotta protect, you know, start thinking her, she's his daughter, and getting very, you know, cozy, and I'm just like, my skin began to crawl with his character. I mean, John Gooden just plays this so well. I mean, oh, I was, in my brain, I was sitting there going, why couldn't have this been released in, like, October? You know, when people might remember his performance, because it's not like Brie Larson room here. We've got people that move around everything, but he just plays this. You don't see John Goodman. You see creepy Howard. And he does something with his voice, too. Did you guys, any of you guys catch that? That he didn't have kind of your normal John Goodman voice. He changed it slightly.
I felt it slightly a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a little bit higher pitched. Because he's got usually a deep voice, and it seemed like he didn't have quite the bass to it, you know, that quite so scary. Mm. So it was almost like just a nice guy type.
That's why that scene when he shot Emmett was so unexpected for me, because like for a while he was very creepy, and then it's all like once him and Michelle started to talk to each other more, he was acting more nicer. And you're all like, okay, I'm starting to warm up to this guy now. And then that moment he goes back to, bam, just shooting him and not giving a shit, I was all like, holy shit, now I don't know how to feel about this guy anymore.
Andrew said it. It's the way that scene is set up so beautifully. When that gunshot does go off, it just realizes just how cold-blooded of a murder that was. I mean,
and normally I don't react. Like, it's rare for me to react to a certain moment, but the minute that happened, I actually had my jaws drop.
Same here. My jaw dropped as well. I was kind of like, oh, damn, things just got real.
But it's good that they do that, because we see too many movies where people are just mowed down and people are just shot and the hero is just mowing down and shooting people. I like it even though it's off-putting. I like it in a movie where gun violence is jarring the way real gun violence is jarring. So when a person is shot with a gun, that's what happens, you know, and I'd like it when the audience can really feel that impact of that violent moment, because I know action movies have their place and video game influence things have their place and, you know, the Wild Bunch or the Killer or whatever, but it's good to have a well-timed moment of violence like that, because it packs the punch that violence should pack. So really, really good that they did that.
Well, in a film that doesn't have a lot of cast too, so when someone gets off, this isn't like, you know, a 30-person cast where a guy's just going through mowing people. There's only three of them, well, then two of them in that, and you get that feeling that Howard was being held back a bit by Emmett. to begin with. So losing that, you're like, well, now she's truly alone. She didn't have that friend, you know, because Emmett was just kind of an innocent. He was out of the whole thing. He's just like, we got to watch VHS. And because they were watching that, what, the cannibal movie. He pulled out that VHS of the cannibal movie. I thought that was hilarious. And, you know, and
why would you put that in a bunker, though?
I even like some of the weird sense of humor that this movie had.
Well, yeah,
I was the only one laughing.
See, and I was too, actually. The other people weren't really saying much. I don't know if it was because they didn't expect anything or whatnot, but for me, yeah, I was laughing at that. I got a kick out of the fact that he was watching, was it 16 Candles?
Yes.
I mean, that in and of itself, you know, where you're questioning his true motives for capturing Michelle, on one hand, you watch it go, oh, it's kind of sensitive because of his daughter. He's watching 16 Candles. On the other hand, it's like he's voluntarily watching 16 Candles.
And they don't really show what his hands are doing. A medium close-up.
My favorite moment was when Howard was playing that game with Michelle and Emmett, and he's just going, I'm watching you. Everywhere. And then Michelle responds with, Santa Claus.
Because Emmett is just losing. He's like, oh, great. He knows that we're trying to make this suit. Which, folks, this ties into her character, which I also like the fact that they tied that in and that everything kind of fell in place where she's trying to make a suit because they think there's biochemicals out, you know, in the real world. And so she's trying to make a chemical suit out of a shower curtain.
The shower curtain.
And I thought that was creative. I was like, wow, you know, she's constantly thinking how to get out of here. Even when she has that proof early on with the lady who was burned and the pigs, which we learn later on, that's because of what the aliens were spraying,
mm-hmm.
not because of, you know, a constant airborne toxin. But even with that, she's still looking, she would still rather be out there than in the bunker. You know, that's what I kind of liked about her character. I mean, you mentioned, Paul, that it was her paranoia. Like, I think for her, it's just they set her character up so well because, I mean, we didn't talk about it, but in the very beginning, there's no dialogue, but we see she's leaving a guy.
Yep.
She's leaving a guy because she's scared of either being in one place for too long or, you know, a commitment.
And she actually...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, she actually does say that whenever there's a problem, she runs away. If it gets too hard, she runs away.
Right, and that stays consistent. And again, mm-hmm. with a cast like this, this small, character consistency comes into effect. I know I'm sounding like movie snobbish here, but you guys, you guys recognize that, you know, you see how a character's set up and they mention something or whatnot, but then it's mentioned and it's not really portrayed
mm-hmm.
a lot of times. But here, yeah, she mentions that she's always running, and that's her whole motivation of getting out. It's driving her so much that she's rather get out there and take her chances than be in a safe, quote-unquote safe bunker. So,
by the way, did you guys catch who she was talking to in the beginning of the movie, like who that voice was?
Bradley Cooper?
Yes. Yes.
Rocket Raccoon
she was talking to. So,
yeah. I thought that was awesome. Like, the minute I heard the voice, I was all like, that's Bradley fucking Cooper.
What's really funny is when they mentioned the daughter thing and whatnot, I'm like, okay, that's kind of creepy and whatnot. Didn't expect him to go full serial killer with him. Andrew, what did you think about them doing full serial killer with Howard? Did you kind of see that coming, or did you think that maybe, you know, something happened to his daughter and he just was, you know, a little too close to her?
No, man, I was expecting it because he chained her to the freaking wall.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that changed that you call that a first impression. That was my first impression of him. When you rescue someone, you don't chain them to the wall. There's no reason for him to have chained her to the wall. No reason, except for the fact that he's a psycho. The end.
Yep.
Well, and if you think about it, then it throws the in the question, and this is a question I wanted to bring up and get your guys' opinion on. Now, we know on the radio we hear her when she's driving. They're talking about power outages, but that was about it. That's when he, which, again, this is spoiler room, folks, he ran her off the road because he panicked, he said, and he, you know, he realized that he hit her and he was just in a hurry. Do you think that he ran her off the road and trapped her in the bunker before realizing at all there was actually any alien threat, and that he already had her in the bunker before the shit hit the fan and Emmett was actually running for his life? Like, he was already in the process of doing his next victim before everything happened? Or do you think that he did this, he captured her because he could get away with it because of the alien stuff going on? Which do you think it is? Do you think that maybe he was would have kidnapped her regardless of the alien stuff?
Yeah, he's a psycho. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. What just, about, like, just a coincidence, maybe. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Is it just a coincidence? What about you, Paul? Was it just a coincidence? Was he already going to kidnap her regardless of whether or not the alien stuff was going on?
While watching the film, actually during the how it was flowing through,
sure,
I believed his story. I honestly did. But after the end, seeing him go full out the way he became, and then having all the little clues, it definitely, I flipped, just like the story flips on you. I actually do believe that he basically probably killed the original little girl and set out to get another girl to, you know, another person. He viewed her as a girl, you know, his child grown up. And that's why he had to get a little older one. When he saw her, I think he just said, yes, I'm going to do this. And it just happened that his entire thing, his entire world fell into place for him. And then so that set him in that path to his own destruction, and deservingly so. But yeah, while watching it, I believed his story because I felt for his character. Mm-hmm. And by the end, though, I definitely feel like what you're suggesting is potentially he would have done this regardless, and he would have told her, and it just everything fell into place for him, and it just was perfect for him.
Right. What about you, Tony? You think that he would have did it regardless of whether or not there was actually the alien invasion going on?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because he found her in the gas station, and you know that's what I actually really liked about the movie, how they basically set it up like you just saw the arm when she was at the gas station, she felt something was wrong, so of course she turned around. So from that point on, I was all like, okay, he has to like hit her because it can't be like by accident. Like, to me, it was like no accident at all that he just crashed into her. It's like what you guys were saying. He's looking for a new girl to basically take in because, well, what Andrew keeps saying, he's a fucking psycho.
Yeah.
Thanks for putting the word fuck in there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, anytime. That's why I'm here.
Awesome.
And, yeah, he had this in motion regardless, and just the fact that the alien invasion happened made it even more, which when you hear that he tried to close the door and Emmett had to fight his way in, makes so much more sense. And that's what clicked for me when Emmett said he had to fight his way in. I'm like, he hadn't planned on a third person at any time in the bunker. He already had her down there. And in fact, he didn't want a third person down there because you've got a witness now. He's got this girl in the bunker. But at the same time, you know, Emmett, I'm sure, pushed his way in, and he's like, okay, oh well, so we've got this guy. Because he couldn't just come right out, right away, and kill him in some strange justification of keeping him alive. You know, that's the only thing I'm wondering now is, why do you think, Tony, maybe he kept Emmett alive the whole time? Because he could have killed him while she was knocked out.
Huh, that's interesting. I actually did not even think about that. let's see. You know, that's a really good question. Why did he actually keep Emmett?
I think it's because the other body wasn't finished dissolving yet, so he had to have a little cute going.
Yeah. Maybe he needed extra help. That's the best I could come up with, because look at some of the stuff like that he would ask Michelle and Emmett to do. So maybe extra help? That's honestly the best I could come up with.
Go ahead, Paul.
For me, it was that he created this illusion of what the world was, mm-hmm. and he believed it so much that doing that, he did believe in his own story, you know? And so that's why he kept him alive, because he was just basically, you know, otherwise if he killed him and threw him outside, then his entire whole thing falls apart, and then I think his world with his daughter also falls apart in his mind, and I don't think he wanted to ever have that happen.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, honestly.
That is a really good point. What about you, Andrew? Emmett being kept alive.
Just, you know, it just helps with his ruse, you know, it helps make him seem legit, because if it was just him, she would have, you know, she probably would have stuck that bottle in his eye socket.
So you think maybe he kept him, he's like, oh, hey, I can use this guy to ease into her good graces.
Yeah, man, it just, make him seem like, hey, of course I saved you, of course I'm not a psycho, look at this other guy I'm helping, you know?
That's a good point. It was just more of his plan, because as crazy as Howard is, he's no dummy. You can tell there's intelligence behind there, which I think adds to the level of scary for his character.
Yeah, it would only have been scarier if he was actually Santa Claus.
If he was. Hold on. True.
Well, I liked how it played out, too, though, later on, how we found out about the girl, because they send Michelle through the air duct to help turn on the air filtration, and she finds the bloody earring and help me scratched into the window. It's like, holy crap. You know, I liked how that sequence played out. So she gets her suit made, and she finally escapes, which, you know, I kind of bought into. They set up earlier with the frozen lock thing. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, and by this point, I'll let it go that she was able to knock the lock out, because that's movie lock.
Yes.
You know, I mean, yes. You know, let's face it, how many movie locks just break a lot easier than they should?
If it didn't break, that would have sucked. Of course it had to break.
Well, yeah, yeah. Of course it would have sucked. It had to break to get her outside. And when she gets outside, that moment of realization, she gets on top of the vehicle, and Tony, what does she see?
She sees an alien.
Yes, and I loved that bit, because even though it was called Cloverfield, for most of the film, I'm like, well, maybe it isn't quite aliens, you know?
It was a psychological thriller for most of the movie.
It was a psychological thriller, and then you get the alien part, but I liked that because it's like, well, now you're, you know, guess what? Crazy Howard was actually right. Which makes you sit there and go, I don't know how I feel about this. Paul, you felt sympathy for Howard.
I did, and that was one of the reasons why. It was like, do you realize that Emmett and Howard would still be alive had you not gone all, you know, psycho on them? I know she was trying to escape and she had justifiable reasons, but to me it was just like, oh no, why? It turned out to be all true. But wait, oh my God, the story is getting really weird.
things get a bit weird with the alien, but I liked that bit. How'd you feel about that, Andrew, when it gets up there and suddenly you realize, oh, we are in a sci-fi film?
I was honestly still thinking about the filtration thing. Like, mm-hmm. Why would he design it like that, knowing he could never get in there to fix that thing? You know what I mean? Like, there was no possible way he could. I was still stuck on that a little bit.
Well, he did say that it was stuck, which means he did have a hatch that he normally could fit through.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that that hatch was stuck.
I was sitting there, I was thinking on that for a minute. Normally things like that don't get to me, but you know what I mean? Like, I was just like, why am I even bothered? Because I don't give a crap about logic. But I like the alien thing. It would have been rad if there were no aliens, but, mm-hmm. you know, that'd be more like a Twilight Zone episode. I don't like the CGI was crappy, but mm-hmm. I'm just not a CGI person. But I loved seeing that whole suit thing. That was just cool to me. You know what I mean? Because it did pay off. She did end up needing it, just not right away. It was great.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just loved how it looked because it had a rubber ducky on it.
Totally, dude.
It was so stylish. It was perfect. That was the one moment I actually did fall in love with the Michelle character. I was like, aww.
She looks so adorable.
She did. I shouldn't like her for what she's wearing, but my God, she looks so cute.
Oh, it was humor, man. It was great.
I know.
It was supposed to be humorous. I mean, the shower curtain was the lighter moment, you know, when she first rolled her eyes at the fact that it's a rubber
big
ducky.
Big badass heroine, you know, in a ducky.
And she proved there, too. She was still thinking on her toes, even back then. You know, even then, she's still, and that's what I loved about the consistency in her character. Because let's face it, we've watched enough thrillers in that, and I've mentioned it already earlier in the show here, that consistency, especially in some of the female characters, usually they're strong till they aren't supposed to be, you know, and here, or, you know, they're smart and they make good decisions up until one point. But no, she's always looking to survive. I mean, here we have this strange alien ship picking up her truck and going to eat her, and she panics a little, but what did she make? She made a Molotov. You know?
That was great.
And then she didn't throw it right away. I'm like, oh, wait, she's going to throw it right away. No, she waited till the thing opened its mouth and tried to inhale, and she threw it in at the same. And I'm like, that was smart. You know, there's so many little things that are done in this film that I love. Nuances or just bits that, you know, I think take it above what could have been a basic generic type of thriller, and I think put it into just a bit of a unique category for it. I mean, not only is it unique for how it was released and kept under wraps for so long, but there are just nuances to it that really made it felt fresh and indie, you know? And I was so happy that it was on a big screen like this. But I think with the title of The Cellar, it would have gone direct to video. I honestly think that, I mean, people have complained about it tacking on the Cloverfield part, but I honestly think that if J.J. Abrams hadn't, I'm not sure if this makes it to wide release. Maybe limited, but what do you think, Tony? You think making it aliens and sci-fi and kind of putting it within that world, do you think that helped maybe get it to the wide screen?
Yeah, I probably think so, honestly. And I think the reason, I know people have a problem with it, but I think the reason they did put in Cloverfield in the title is to let people know that some ways it is a sci-fi film, and it does start to become a sci-fi film in like the last 15 minutes. And like you said, The Cellar would have sounded more like a direct, straight-to-DVD movie. So honestly, even though I know people have complaints with it, I actually like that he kept 10 Cloverfield Lane. Well, that and because you know that scene where Michelle escapes at the end, you see a mailbox that has 10 Cloverfield on it. So obviously that was the name of the street she was in as well. So I think for that sense, it does make sense why it has that title.
It does play out a bit like a feature film Twilight Zone episode, doesn't it, Paul? Especially with that mailbox at the end?
Definitely. Well, it actually became more of the Outer Limits with the at the end there. But yes, definitely.
Yeah, when I saw that mailbox, I'm like, oh, that's just his little nod to, because that's totally what a Twilight Zone would pull. Like, here's the kind of final bookend to, here's what the story is actually about or where it is. Well, you know, I don't know if you guys ever saw it, just not if you don't mind me mentioning it, just Twilight Zone had one episode where they had this gambler who thought he died, and he was in a hotel room, and everybody was waiting on him, and he'd go down to the casino, and he'd win. And he thought it was really great. No matter what he played, he'd win. And after a while, he'd keep winning, but then he started suspecting something, and he goes, well, he goes, you know, I never thought I'd make it to heaven, and you know, and this doesn't quite seem right. They're like, who said you were in heaven? Because as a gambler, that risk or losing, he liked almost losing more than winning. So the fact that no matter what he played, wins, you know, but you don't get that hook till the end, and I like that, and that's what it felt like with this, was that own hook of, oh yeah, this is this, but yep, here you go. You know, this is what we're actually doing and what's going on. And, I mean, you could kind of suspect why it was called 10 Cloverfield Lane because of the location. But I really, from start to finish, this film had me smiling. And it's great to see an indie film like this. I mean, this thing was made for $5 million. And it made $25 million opening weekend, estimated right now. That's huge. Andrew, do you think this might give some hope for them to come up with other smaller projects? Or do you think this maybe is like a diamond in the rough, so to speak?
Well, I mean, I guess what people can start doing is taking original scripts and tweaking them to be sequels or prequels or, you know, to other things. And that way people will go see them, because the Hollywood's problem is they think no one will see anything if they don't know what it is already. And this proves that that's, you know, probably true. Because, you know, would you have gone to see J.J. Abrams Presents The Cellar starring John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead and have a really strong, exactly the same trailer? No, people probably would not have gone, you know, because is Cloverfield like a huge movie? It was a hit movie, but it was kind of a long time ago, and it had a really strong trailer too and had an air of mystery about it. So I think people, part of the mystery and intrigue of this movie was how nobody knew anything about it until it came out, and then they still didn't see how it related. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of tied together. So yeah, it being a success, yeah, it's going to be funny to see if anyone else tries to, like, you know, maybe it'll be the new, like, it used to be sequels, now it's remakes. Now maybe that's the next thing. This is the unrelated tie-in.
The sister film, so to speak.
Yeah, which would be fine with me, because, you know, it's kind of whatever it takes to get smarter movies in the theaters, you know, because realistically, let's be blunt about it. 10 Cloverfield Lane is a smarter movie and a better movie than the mass audiences deserve to see, I think.
It truly surprised me watching it, because being a lover of indie films, which many of us in the room here are, you watch enough of them, I'm sitting there and I'm just smiling going, I am so glad this got wide release, but I'm sitting here going, I can't believe this got wide release because of the way it's handled. But I that's what I loved, and it is the mystery. You're right. We've talked about marketing on other big budget films before, but Paul, maybe they're going to show that less is more?
Possibly.
For marketing? Because even after that trailer came out, we didn't get a whole lot about 10 Cloverfield Lane.
No, we did not.
Usually you get the whole movie edited to down to 2.5 minutes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, I already know what's going to happen in that Batman Superman one already.
Right, didn't someone cut together like the first 15 minutes based on all the trailers and teasers?
Something like that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think they did. And here we get a film that had a couple trailers, and no one even knew it was being made, especially with the names that had in it, but still, somehow they kept this undercover from the interwebs for a year, you know?
Yeah, it was good marketing, just like Cloverfield was good marketing, except for the movie is good, and I did not like Cloverfield.
So, but Paul, you've watched a lot of indie films as well. How'd you feel about seeing an indie film like this on the big screen?
Oh, I loved it. Well, it actually, there was one negative thing about it. Mm-hmm. Is because I tried to use my movie pass.
Oh, sure.
And because it got so big, it went into all those ones with the Dream Loungers in it.
and I can't use my movie pass on that. So I had to find this small kind of theater in, in a town 20 minutes away just so that I could watch the film.
Well, that's a little in the spirit of indie, though, too, if you're watching it on a smaller screen. So
My shoes actually did stick to the floor. And this was the first showing that day. So how did it get sticky? Seriously, I was scared.
Wow. That's an experience of itself. But, Tony, how about you? A thought with this indie film? You think it might lead to hopefully some better and showing that less can be more, mystery might be good for your film?
Yeah, I do think so. But, you know, at the same time, they have to still do it in the way where they have to still intrigue the audience because, you know, sadly, unfortunately, look at last year, Tomorrowland showed you less, and that didn't really want to make a lot of people want to go see it. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, if they do more movies like this one, they'll basically do what 10 Cloverfield Lane does. Like, maybe release it, like, 2 or 3 months before it's released. That way you can at least have one trailer where it doesn't give much away. You could have a couple of TV spots because this movie really only had the teaser trailer, a couple of TV spots, and really that's all you needed just to intrigue you on the idea of what this movie's about. So I think as long as future projects do something like that, then I think there are possibilities for more movies like this to come out and hopefully make the audiences want to go see that movie in the theater.
Yeah, I agree. I hope so too because I think it more films like this deserve to be made. I mean, it's a small budget film, you know. It's only like $5 million, which is like peanuts now. That's like the cost of hair care products for most films.
And it made $25 million on the box office this weekend, so it already made its budget back, which is cool
by a lot, you know.
Oh yeah,
and I really hope that that means that this is going to be more of maybe we get smaller films or films with not quite so much marketing. But part of the hook, I do believe, is what Andrew said, is the fact that they made this a sister film to Cloverfield. And it you show just people in a bunker, which really had people going, how's this going to tie in with the original film? And that mystery, I think, really is what pulled people in for this film, which is fine. I'm just happy it's getting seen. And again, I think the last couple of years, we've seen a few more of these smaller indie films actually make it wide release, and I love it when they do, and I especially love it when they're good. And I think we can all agree that, at least I thought, 10 Cloverfield Lane was really good, which made me happy because I was going to think that if this film failed, that, you know, that would definitely be the end of creative marketing or creative films, you know, getting wide release, the smaller films, you know. But it gave me hope. And so hopefully we do see more in the future. So I think we're going to wrap it up here for 10 Cloverfield Lane. Hope we wet your whistle a bit. Folks, go see this movie. Go support it. It's a lot of fun. Don't expect a direct sequel to Cloverfield, but at the same time, John Goodman. That's all I got to say in this film. I mean, Mary Elizabeth does great. Don't get me wrong. She's fantastic in here, too, and John Gallagher. But really, John Goodman is just that's a character that you want to watch. And I want to watch it over and over again. This film definitely, for me, is going to have rewatchability. And when it comes out on disc, I'm going to get it because I definitely want to watch it and show some people who may not go see it. So I appreciate you, everyone tuning in. We're going to go down really quick, I think. And you guys, if you want, tell folks where they can find you at. And if you want to give a final thought on 10 Cloverfield Lane. So go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, hey, everybody. If you like 10 Cloverfield Lane, I recommend seeing a movie called Z for Zachariah, because that is another bottle movie, but it is in the sci-fi genre. But it does not have to turn into a popcorny action movie. And that's really my only my only thing about 10 Cloverfield Lane and that it's tied into Cloverfield kind of meant that there was also an expectation from the audience of there being alien monster Independence Day at some point. And, you know, it gives you that and fine. But yeah, Z for Zachariah is incredible. Doesn't quite go that route. But if you're a fan of things like The Twilight Zone, that is the movie right there. It's awesome. As far as me, www.gonzorific.com if you like to see some cheap, cheesy, low-budget movies that my friends and I make here in Athens. Also on Amazon On Demand, we have stuff available for rent if buying movies from people that make things to support them is not your thing. These are like $2 rentals. We have a movie called The Underground Cinema, cinema with an S. We have one called Fake Blood, one called Mondo Gonzo, and one called Pajama Nightmare. And this stuff is full of beautiful women, monsters, and farts.
Nice. And Paul, go ahead.
My final thought on 10 Cloverfield Lane. Andrew got me thinking about something, and this is kind of interesting. I just, you know, he got me thinking about it. Cloverfield is kind of like a found footage, shaky cam type of film, just like Blair Witch Project was. And 10 Cloverfield Lane is kind of like this sequel that isn't really a sequel, but kind of ties into it, just like the Blair Witch Project 2 was for it. So it got me to thinking, did they make any other Blair Witch Projects?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but this was a lot better than Blair Witch.
Well, it is, definitely, but they seem to be following the pattern. Do you see that?
Yeah, it is a pattern.
It was several erotic witch projects and bear wench projects.
So yes. Maybe they'll have those Cloverfield versions of them, maybe? I don't know.
There is. It's called Cleavage Field, and I'm not even kidding you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But instead of pimping my stuff, I am kind of working on a big project in October called the Northeast Wisconsin Horror Film Festival. And right now we're taking film submissions, so all those independent horror film makers out there, I would encourage you to go to Film Freeway and look for the Northeast Wisconsin Horror Film Festival and submit your films. Because right now we're probably one of the most reasonable entry fees that you can find out there. And we're going to show it to a lot of people that love horror. So it's just going to be a fantastic event. And I'm just hoping that everybody that hears this podcast will either know someone that makes films or they themselves make films and just submit some films for us to screen. So
awesome. So, yeah, check that out, folks. The new Horror Film Festival. Great stuff there. And, yeah, come to Wisconsin in October so you can experience the fun. Tony, how about you, sir?
My final thoughts on 10 Clover... excuse me. My final thoughts on 10 Cloverfield Lane is that I think it's an incredible movie. I was blown away by this movie. I know it's too early to say this, but it is so far my favorite movie of 2016. That's how much I love this movie. I love the mystery aspects behind it. I loved how this movie was building tension, and the tension just never stops. It was there from beginning to end, and man, when it gets to the last 15 minutes, I was honestly speechless when it got to the last 15 minutes of the movie. I really loved how it built up to that. I thought it paid off very nicely. It had focused on three actors, and I thought those three actors did a great job for the awesome material that they had. This is a great directorial debut from Dan. The movie was just all around awesome to watch, and this movie right next to The Witch are the most unnerving movies I've seen this year so far. So definitely a very unnerving movie that I loved watching. And as far as where you guys can find me, you can find me at youtube.com/22tigerdude. You can like my Facebook page at facebook.com/22tigerdude, Twitter/TigerDude22, then Instagram at 22TigerDude, and then MoviePilot at MoviePilot.com/TigerDude22. I know so many of these plugs.
And you can find links to all these fine folks at specialmarkproductions.com, as well as our archive of all our Spoiler Room episodes. And the latest final cuts that I've done are on there, as well as my YouTube channel, youtube.com/specialmark. Also do stuff for We Live Film, where you can head over there. They're We Live Entertainment now, but their YouTube channel is still We Live Film if you search for that. And you can find my segments of Horror Thursdays, as well as some other fantastic stuff there. And, yeah, just some great stuff, all at specialmarkproductions.com. I hope you all enjoyed this conversation. I can just say that 10 Cloverfield Lane is a favorite of mine this year already. You know, here they're talking about all these big summer blockbuster films coming up, and so far some of my favorite films have been in the early part of the season, which hasn't happened for quite some time, because usually this is the dumping ground for not-so-great films. So the fact that we are getting such great films now, summer is going to have a lot to live up to, I think, and may not meet that expectations, but that's okay. When these come out on Blu-ray, I'll just watch these films again. 10 Cloverfield Lane is definitely something to talk about and check out. Do not expect a direct sequel to Cloverfield, but do expect a great time at the cinema, and hopefully it'll pique your interest into some other indie projects out there, showing you don't need a big budget to have a big film. And this is definitely a prime example of that. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Spoiler Room. The conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.